You are listening to the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast, the official podcast of the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Here's your host, Tyus France.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for tuning into the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast, the official podcast of the Libertarian Party of Nevada. So if you find yourself in Nevada and you care about freedom and liberty and maybe just politics, we're glad you tuned in. And if you find yourself on some other plane, maybe you're in a different state and you're tuning in. Maybe you're on a different party and you're tuning in. Like, we appreciate that even more. Sitting across from me is Alex. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Love to be here, Tyus.
Awesome. I just got back from a month-long tour. So we kind of put out some bank shows. That a bank show, for those who don't know, is you record more shows than necessary so that you can put them in the bank, so that when the host goes out of the state, there's something to play. But I wasn't perfect at releasing those on time. So I apologize to anybody who was like, hey, wasn't there one supposed to be on that date? Like, sorry guys, it just didn't happen. I was doing some managing of entertainers, which is kind of my current career right now. What happened to you this last month?
Oh, it's been very busy. I actually just deployed my first application ever. So that was really exciting. Like, I wrote every line of code and everything, and it does what it's supposed to do, and so that was like a really big like accomplishment. So,
public sector, private sector?
I work for the public sector indirectly.
Well, I'm saying this is an app that somebody could buy in like the app store,
no.
Or is this
no? This is for internal use only. Okay. But it was still fun, you know. And there'll be like several hundred people that use it, nice. So that was like a good feeling, you know. I mean, until you've done it, you just don't get to. Like, say, I got an app, you know?
Of course. So. And it's done, and it, like, that's a book. Yep. Dare I ask how many lines of code?
Ooh, let's see. There's over 100 files, and each one had about 500 to 1,000 lines in it. But that includes comments.
That's so exhausting.
But yeah, it was a full year to write everything. But yeah, it was a lot of fun, and I really got to kind of beef up my WPF C# skills, and, you know, it was a good experience.
I play squash with this guy, a programmer. And I found out that his code is on Mars right now, and I had no idea. He wrote some of the code that in the little, you know, go karts that they put
the MRO, they probably put something in the rover.
It's the rovers, launched. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, it's run on something about the system. It's very low energy and stable and whatever. Okay, that's the end of our programming conversation. So big news on the political front is the environmental situation going on with Trump not wanting to get involved with this. What's the term that they've got?
The Paris Accord.
Paris Accord.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on this? Before we get into thoughts. What's happening with this? What is the situation so that our listeners know what we're talking about before we start giving our opinions?
Absolutely. So for those who didn't see all over Facebook and everything, right, this just followed the Kathy Griffin, I don't even know what you would call that, faux pas, maybe. But anyway, basically, there was what some would call a historic accord between a lot of the nations in the world. That was signed by President Obama. I don't remember if it was ratified at all by the U.S. Senate, but I would suspect it wasn't. And basically, it is an agreement on reducing carbon emissions coming from various nations, so that way, by a certain benchmark, like 2035 and 20, you know, we could say, okay, we reduced them by 10%, then 20, that sort of thing. So that was the main thrust of this accord and what it was. And so the controversy was that after the whirlwind 10-day tour, I want to say,
something like
10-country tour by Donald Trump, the new president of the United States, for those of you who somehow don't know.
If you missed it.
if you missed the last election, Hillary didn't win. It's Trump that won. And so he pulled off of the Paris Accord. And so there's been a lot of discussion about this, and certainly I have my views. Did you have any thoughts on it?
Well, I had a couple questions on it. I was curious, is there anything that makes this enforceable, or is this simply just a, well, I agree to do this and you agree to do this type thing?
I think it was more along those lines. Yeah, I didn't see, some of the analysis I saw said that we didn't pass a single law or regulation that would have put us on track to meet this. So it, even though we signed it in 08, we may, or I don't even know where we signed it. I don't know where I got 08 from, but President Obama signed it during his presidency. There weren't any actual movements, regulatory or law wise, toward this. So no progress had been made. And a lot of times on these agreements, you'll see countries kind of at the last minute, like really reduce their footprint. Because they don't have an incentive to do so until they're about to hit their benchmark, right? So they don't have a real big incentive to lower their carbon emissions. If they're supposed to be at a certain percentage by 2035, they'll just put in regulations in 32 and then be like, okay, by 35, we know we'll hit our mark. But they're not going to start them now in 2017 and then potentially, right, hurt their industry and all of the coal, oil, and gas money that's being lobbied and car manufacturers that are lobbying, right? They're not going to get themselves hurt by those people until the very last possible second.
Yeah. I mean, I care deeply about the environment. I live in one. So some of the things that stood out to me, one is that Elon Musk, who was an advisor for Trump, stepped down. And he runs a very green company, obviously, so the mm-hmm. environmental stuff is in to his benefit.
Oh, yeah.
And then Apple, who's another, actually a previous employer to me, their CEO, Tim Cook, made a big statement about it. And, okay, so where do I stand on this? First, I stand on it as far as saying I don't think the government should be creating additional regulations. But I think it's also interesting to look at some of these top players that are making larger statements about it, because those top players actually have the most to gain in this situation. If you're looking at these companies that already have the most technologically advanced plants, or they're already complying to the most stringent bylaws, for them, they get to reduce competition mm-hmm. For themselves, because nobody else would be able to compete at that same level if these regulations were put into place. So in a way, it actually kind of can hurt small businesses. Now, I don't mean to say, well, companies should just be able to destroy the environment, right?
Right, right.
But
your point's well taken, right? In other words, we don't want, obviously Elon Musk has a vested interest. So in this particular case, despite how objective he is normally, he's a businessman, right? And a very successful one. I mean, he manages to get all of these contributions for companies that are under production and over cost quarter after quarter. So I honestly don't know how he does it, but my hat tipped to him, and he was a physicist as an undergrad. So,
he gets a lot of tax money.
Yeah, but yeah, that's one of the ways, right, that his company stays afloat, along with a lot of companies that went belly up after the solar subsidies quit here in Nevada. But in any event, I think the point I'd like to make is that we don't need the government. And first of all, we have a federal government. A lot of people don't remember that the federal government does not refer to what a lot of people, and even myself, I'm guilty of, colloquially, right, we say federal and we mean national. But in reality, the federal government refers to the dual layer of state and federal.
What do you mean by that?
So you have the state and national government, yeah. Right? The concept of federalism is having the state and the national government. That is both together the federal layer.
Yeah, so everything falls kind of within the federal layer is what you're
yes.
saying.
Yes, so except for county and local, right? But like the states and the union, right? Those two together put together are the federalism, right? And then you have that that balancing act between the two. And this is something that the founders thought were very important as a sort of balance to the national government's power was the state government's power. And so nowadays, we generally say federal government, we mean national, and then we'll distinguish by saying state government. But in reality, one of the main reasons that I bring it up even is that we have a federal government because the state governments that are member constituents can say, well, we'll follow that accord anyway. And they have every right and power to do that. And so I think a lot of people forget that, first of all, from our standpoint, from the libertarian standpoint, if you as an individual are reducing your carbon footprint, recycling, reusing as much as possible, buying things that last 20, 30 years, not two or three.
Putting solar on your roof.
Solar on your own roof. You can already make a difference. And I find a lot of the people who are out there yelling about this sort of thing, they're not willing to step up to the game. and do it themselves. You know, I would absolutely respect someone who has a compost pile and has almost no trash, solar panels, right? All of this sort of thing. I would completely respect them saying to me, hey, you know what? We do need, you know, more people to be in on this. But it would be on a personal level, right? I admire people who take the dedication to recycle everything, reuse everything. I know I don't. I throw a lot more away than I should. I don't have solar panels because it's just not feasible for me. And it's not feasible for a lot of people. But what's missed here is that a lot of people think that the only way the environment's going to get better is through the government. And that's just not true, right? It could start with every one of us being water conservers here in the desert, particularly. It can start right now with us using food that is sourced locally, isn't transported across, you know, hundreds and thousands of miles, which of course leads to a lot of having fossil fuel emissions from gas, right? I mean, that's one of the most expensive parts to a food anyway. I mean, a lot of people are like, oh, this restaurant's locally sourced. Well, that's actually a lot cheaper for them in many ways because they're not paying transportation costs, refrigeration costs, all of this sort of thing. So I think if you took the final analysis of it, you'd say, well, the Paris Accord didn't bind us to anything. There were no laws or regulations that I'm aware of. And if I'm wrong, then email us at podcast@lpnevada.org and let me know that I'm wrong. But to my knowledge, there weren't any regulations or laws passed. So it doesn't make much of a difference whether we're in it or not. What's more important than the federal government signing this agreement and ratifying it through the states, more important than that is just all of us individually doing what we can to make our environment a cleaner, safer place. That means volunteering for the city of Las Vegas when they do their trash pickups. They'll go and hit a neighborhood with city and other volunteers. They'll go with Clark County, right? If you go look at these, there's a lot of opportunities to go out there and make our environment better, cleaner, and safer. And you can choose to buy from companies, right, that are more environmentally conscious. I don't see any reason why the government should have to step in and tell everyone, no, you have to do this or that. I'd rather see a world where we all choose to make it a better place, right? Where we say, this is important to us. And we're not going to wait for the government and a lot of these baby boomers to decide that it's important to have a good environment, right? We don't have time to wait for that. So I'm young. If you're a millennial and you're listening to this and you're like, you know what? You know, this was horrible. This was the greatest, you know, catastrophe of all time. RIP the Earth. The Earth's going to be fine, first of all, but our environment may not be, right? The environment we evolved in may not be. So I would challenge you to find a way you can live a greener, more environmentally conscious life right now, right? Maybe that means buying a more fuel efficient car, so you're using a lot less gas, right? Maybe that means you're going to make the effort to recycle, right? Even just recycling is a huge help. It's a lot less mining. There's a lot of benefits to that. It lowers our landfill usage tremendously. And there are so many things you could do that aren't that difficult to get started and that would make a bigger impact, all of us together, than the government telling businesses you can't put out, you know, this or that pollution.
Well, I was having a conversation with some friends about this yesterday, last night, and one of them mentioned that this kind of agreement can lead to incentivizing companies to make green cars and so forth, battery operated cars, which I'm in favor of. But I look at that and I say, well, you know, Elon Musk and Tesla just surpassed Ford in market cap, and they did that without that regulation in place, right? They did that without that agreement in place. People are buying things for the reason that they value. And if somebody happens to value the environment, which is something that I personally value, and I know a lot of other people do, all these people that might be outraged that we are not signing this accord, the best way they could possibly vote is to use their dollars. So if they want to buy the cleanest computer, if they want to buy the cleanest food, if they want to, whatever that is, they can incentivize, they don't need the government to do it. They can incentivize the companies to change their policies by only spending dollars on the companies that are the cleanest, are the greenest.
Absolutely. And something I'd like to point out, I'd like to thank my friend Seth Martin, who's a regular contributor to our blog for lpnevada.org and writes on a number of science topics, including this one, for reminding me and a lot of people on Facebook earlier this week that electric vehicles are only as good and as clean as the thing that produces that electricity. And today, that is oil, gas, coal. And coal, yeah. Right? especially in Nevada. We got a lot of coal power plants out there, all right? And so don't let anybody tell you different, that they're only using environmentally conscious, because when there's low solar or wind output, guess what the fallback is? Even in Germany, right? Everyone looks at Germany, you know, and they actually have twice the tons per megawatt hour. I think I got that one right. They have twice the carbon emission in tons per megawatt hour that France does. And if you look at the difference, right, everyone's like, oh, Germany, 50% solar panels, right? What do they have to fall back on when the solar output's low? Coal power plants. Mm-hmm. Do you know what France uses for their power?
I'm going to guess coal, just off of the way you're looking.
Oh, no.
No?
No. France has got one of the lowest carbon emissions per megawatt hour in the entire world, because over 80% of their power is produced by nuclear fission reactors. This is the most important thing you can do if you're environmentally conscious, is this is the only large power production capability that we have that is on par, actually far surpasses what coal, oil, and gas can put out, that is zero carbon emissions. This is the energy of the future, right? If we want to be a spacefaring civilization, we need nuclear power.
And there's sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're good.
There's a lot of alternatives out there that are incredibly interesting, like hydrogen fuel cells is an incredibly interesting alternative. But the only way any of these things get made and get produced and get brought to local cities is with those people taking an active, engaging role in their local government and in what they spend their dollars on. And so that ultimately comes down to you. It doesn't come down to you pointing a finger at the federal government. It comes down to you taking action on a local level. That's what's going to make the change.
Absolutely. And in modern day, nuclear reactors that are built are essentially meltdown proof, because the energy source that they use, thorium, and this is what Seth Martin was really alerting me to, because most of my knowledge is on what is more traditionally the uranium-fired reactors that use neutron bombardment to start a chain reaction of uranium-235. It enriches it to 236 very temporarily, very unstable, which immediately it breaks apart, sending out even more neutrons, 3 to 1. And then those neutrons go and run into another uranium-235 that then fissions down. So you start this chain reaction, right? You have one neutron in, three out. And you keep doing this to many, many, many atoms, you generate a huge amount of energy, something on the order of 200 billion electron volts per event, whereas chemical reactions like oil, gas, and coal, 3 electron volts per event. 200 billion per event, 3 per event. That's the difference between the amount of power that's stored in the strong nuclear force versus the electromagnetic force. And so it's very important that we convince people to take a look at modern-day reactors that don't produce waste. Their waste product is recycled as part of the energy creation process. They're able to take these leftover fissioned elements, and they're able to then burn those down, so to speak, fission those down into where they're a stable, non-radioactive waste product. And everything in the world is trying to fusion up to iron and fission down to iron, right? Everything in the world. That's what everything's trying to do.
You and me both.
And iron, because iron, for those who don't know, iron is the most stable atomic element. There's nothing more stable than iron, and that's why everything's trying to either become iron by fusing up or fission down toward it. So there is a stable byproduct at the end of enough fissions to get to. And so, again, modern-day reactors, we're talking about extremely safe, extremely clean power. We're talking zero carbon emissions, the lowest worker death per terawatt hour per reactor. We're talking about the very safest, strictest standards there are, and the most power produced of any plant. You can take away several plants. In fact, President Obama, for those who don't know, in 10 actually said that if we built a nuclear reactor today, it would be the equivalent of taking 3.5 million cars off the road.
Wow.
That's how much, compared to generating an equal amount of power from a coal or gas or oil power plant. So essentially, we're talking about a massive reduction in our carbon footprint as a country. But again, the oil, gas, and coal lobbies, right, they make sure that there's not any kind of building of new nuclear facilities. So we actually haven't built anything new and using a modern reactor design in over 35 years.
And is that why we were left with waste and dealing with the whole Yucca Mountain thing?
Yes, we only have waste because we're using we don't have any new reactors except for the one that they're building in, gosh, I want to say Tennessee, but that one has not opened yet, and they're not using a modern design. They made a safer version of a classic uranium reactor. And one of the things that I thought was interesting is that the reason that the Department of Defense only really supports the uranium version, not the thorium version, is because guess what one of the waste products is for uranium-235 fission?
They get depleted uranium.
They get weapons-grade plutonium.
Oh, that's worse.
One of the, yes. One of the and this is another reason why uranium-235 reactors are so tightly controlled, so well overseen, is because one of the waste products, not a very huge amount, but one of the waste products is weapons-grade plutonium, which is used in the construction of nuclear weapons.
I was going with depleted uranium because I know they use that on tanks for defense, but we're talking about a very terrifying offensive capability.
So they have no interest in thorium, which produces safe nuclear power, because there's no plutonium for them to just come, oh, well, you need to get rid of this. Let me just grab this plutonium that you got, and we'll take it off to where we're going to, you know, put it into. They have to continuously refurbish their nuclear armaments, et cetera. So in any event, there's not been any interest from the DOD side to produce these modern thorium reactors for this very reason.
Wow.
And so this is one of the main reasons why there hasn't been DOE level funding for new modern reactors with almost no waste products. Obviously, there are a lot of reasons, many of them political, but this is one of them, is the intergovernment, if you think about it, we built all the highways and nuclear reactors in like 15 years, but now we haven't built one in like 30 something years.
And we can't finish the maintenance on the highways, no matter what.
I-11 is like not going to be completed forever.
Can't be done.
So I'm never going to be able to safely drive down to Phoenix, apparently. But anyway, that not to geek out on you, but I'm sorry I did. But the point is that the argument that nuclear power isn't safe is bogus. Far more people die of coal. In fact, coal, oil, and gas power plant explosions are so common, and worker deaths are so common, they're not hardly newsworthy. You don't read about the two workers that died in an explosion in some sub-reactor of a coal power plant. But if you heard about the smallest amount of radioactive iodine released into the atmosphere, right? Everyone knows about that Three Mile Island incident. And that was honestly one of the, guess who decided to release all of that waste into a river? It was the EPA, right? And the US NRC. They were the ones that said, well, this is okay.
What's the NRC?
The Nuclear Regulatory something.
Commission, probably.
Yeah, commission, yeah. They've gone through several name changes. Originally, they were the Atomic Energy Commission, and then they got like re-designated. So anyway, the point is that government is the reason that we don't have new, safe, clean nuclear reactors. And this is one of the greatest shortcomings of the 21st century, is we didn't take one of the greatest gifts in the 20th century, nuclear power, and turn it into anything. We're still using freaking coal.
Yep.
Like it's the freaking 1750s. I mean, I'm sorry, but like, why? I mean, there's not too terribly too much. Arby's employs more people than the coal. I mean, there's really not jobs to protect. There are. I can't find a reason other than the big, powerful oil, gas, and coal lobbies are saying, don't you dare go away from these.
Yeah, well, I mean, the reason is there's organizations that can stop progress from taking place through regulation, and those organizations are controlled by people, and those people can be manipulated.
Yeah.
And so if you want change to take place in those areas, you are going to have to step up to the plate and become an activist in your area. That's what it's going to take.
Yeah, and so my hope is that people will use their anger and outrage at this Paris Accord deal to make changes in their own personal lives, but to advocate for real clean power, which is nuclear power, right? It's absurd to think that we're going to build sufficient wind, solar, geothermal, and other sources of power that will be enough to match the almost exponentially growing needs of power in the United States. It's just absurd to think that we're going to be able to have that many rooftops with solar and that many. If you just think
about.
With
that being said, you're not against people.
No. I think definitely there's. I mean, you're not going to build a nuclear reactor in your. I mean, you could, but you're not going to build a nuclear reactor in your garage. So, right, absolutely. If you want to do environmental clean power, if you think that if the, you know, NV Energy, right, using coal power plants, you don't like that, put solar on your roof, right? Now you've made a huge difference. And you didn't have to wait for the government or anybody, right? You just did it right now. $15,000. Go, you know, go put solar on your roof, especially in Nevada. But in the wintertime in Minnesota, when they get like, you know, 5 hours of sunlight a day, and even the sunlight they get is tiny,
yeah,
solar is not a possibility there. Wind isn't a possibility everywhere. And geothermal really only works when you have large changes in elevation. All that said, nuclear power is the only thing that we can build anywhere. We just got to have some water nearby to do a loop, right? And we're not even using the water in the river. I mean, that's such a misnomer too, right? We're using the water in the river to cool down the the thermal process, right? Because we still boil water. I mean, this is so absurd, right? Other than solar, almost every other way that we, and wind,
yeah,
right? We produce power through the refrigerative process, right? We boil water to steam, right? It turns turbines, then it condenses. But that to condense it, you have to send it back through something that will carry around waste heat. And then we push that back up through the reactor to boil again and then turbine. And you have this whole thermodynamic cycle.
Yeah. We get the dam. Got Hoover Dam.
Okay, yes. Water power is actually a really good way to produce power in a lot of areas. And in fact, that's one of the oldest, if not the oldest, way to produce power. I guess technically wind, because people used to use wind turbines to crush up grain.
But wind you can't... So what water can do that wind can't do is when the wind stops, you're done. But with water, if you've got an excess of energy, you can power a pump to move more water behind the dam. So that you're essentially using that gravity as a battery source for when now you need more energy, you let more water go. Wind, you can't do that with. Nuclear, no problem at all. Do it whenever you want.
Yeah.
It's always there.
And so, again, I mean, if we want to be a spacefaring, going to Mars, Tesla, right? If we want to be that society and we want to have all electric vehicles, then we need to have a huge source of power. And that only source that we know of is nuclear fission. Fusion isn't viable yet, and mainly because we have no way to contain that reaction safely.
And we're a couple years away from like a Dyson sphere.
I mean, again, they're having to do... So the sun can do a nuclear reactor that's fusion because it has gravity,
yep,
pulling everything into a ball, right? But we don't have that, right? We have to actually contain it ourselves in order to say, you know, kiss. Now kiss, right? That's basically what we're doing with hydrogen atoms, which we're saying now kiss, and then they release a massive amount of energy when
it's
they
come. It's getting sexy in here.
I'm so sorry.
No, anyway, it's good.
But
this is like science. We got science. We got sex. We got politics. It's all in one podcast.
Absolutely. And so, I mean, it's, again, don't get angry about the Paris Accord. Go out and do it. I mean, that's the message I want to send. If you're listening and you're like, this was absolute trash, right? You know, we should definitely have stayed in the Paris Accord. The best way you can affect policy changes is vote for people who are pro-nuclear, advocate for nuclear power sources to be created in your state, near you. Know that they're completely safe nowadays. We haven't had a nuclear incident in almost 35 years. Even the one that we did had, no one died. No one even got cancer, you know? So to point at ancient reactor designs built poorly and maintained poorly in Russia from over 40 years ago, or that got hit by a tsunami, which isn't a possibility for a lot of the country, but is in Fukushima, right? Even then, the radiation from Fukushima, a lot of people looked at that and thought, oh, there's all this radiation. But they were looking at a map that was actually an NNOAA map, and it was completely different than... It had nothing to do with radiation. So there's just so much mis-science out there, and it really bothers me on like such a fundamental level, Tyus. I mean, I wish there was a way that we could just communicate real science to people better. And if you don't believe it, right, again, do an experiment, prove us wrong. But again, nuclear power, engineers have spent 35, 40 years perfecting that technology. And the only reason we won't build new designs is because politics and the government keep getting in the way.
Yeah. We're not getting cold fusion anytime soon at the same rate. Let's wrap up for today's podcast. Thank you for being here with me. Thank you for listening. If you want to get involved, check us out at lpnevada.org. You can email us regarding the podcast at the same place, or actually podcast@lpnevada.org. But all the podcasts are going to be listed there. Also, our get-togethers are going to be listed there. So please stop by, get involved, and until next time, make it all about freedom.
This show is brought to you by the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Music is provided by T. Sims. Please support the show by subscribing, sharing it with friends, and leaving a positive review on iTunes. For more information or to learn how to get involved, visit lpnevada.org. Thank you for listening.